Well, it's now a little later in the morning.
I was fast asleep when Chris was talking about the dawn chorus. And I'm here now with Chris on the fringe of the woodland here with just tantalising glimpse of bluebells, which I know we'll talk about next week.
Yes, they're now coming up to their prime sort of colour display of the year, I suppose. And there's 12 acres solid in this area of 30 acres of woodland. And so quite an impressive sight, and the perfume first thing this morning when I came down here was almost overpowering. It's really lovely. Now, there has been a bit of a report about butterflies and their concern carried out by the Butterfly Conservation Corps, and one of the questions I get lots from either people walking on the farm or through the emails we get through the Countryside podcast is, why are there so many butterflies on High Ash Farm? Well, one of the answers is we've got ivy here, which is great for hibernating adults, but it's this time of the year that kind of comes out really important, and many of the butterfly species, it's quite surprising, has one food plant that it uses all the time. A couple of horses riding past, the girls catching up on all the news.
Just heard a thrum of a woodpecker as well.
Yes, oh, there's great spot and lesser spot drumming in here.
And actually, something else, Chris, looking along the margin of Fox's Grove,
yes,
here, all the insects.
St. Look. George's Day flies, which frighten people because they've got a very large ovipositor hanging down underneath them. And
there's tens of thousands we can see.
Absolutely.
Here.
And so what's happening is the wind is coming through from the west. We're standing on the east side of the woodland and it's wafting them out through the trees. And this is the area on cooler days, particularly in about a month's time, when the same things happen to the aphids on the underside of the sycamore leaves. They get wafted through, and this huge rideway down beside the wood, it's best part of 20 metres wide, is just a riot of swallows, house martins, and usually the swifts are here by then, and they're just hoovering these poor insects. Any in the St. George's Day flies that are left, some people call them all sorts of different names, so the name is variable for them. They've got a long scientific name, but nevertheless they're quite impressive. And it's easy fodder because they're flying quite slowly. But if you're having your first barbecue, hoverfly just on my arm there, and these insects come down, it kind of puts people off, and they get the swatter out, and actually they're quite harmless. So really nice to see that. Well spotted. Got the whole sort of dread of lesser black-backed gulls flying over the top of us. And a buzzard in the distance there, sky high, just over, just circling round above one of the nesting territories. Can you spot him? He's,
yes,
right high up, almost halfway up to the cloud level.
So much going on, but
there is.
Not birds, other creatures with wings,
yes,
butterflies.
Butterflies, because many of the species of butterflies, it's discovered, are in quite sharp decline. The common species fairly safe, and one of those which we saw last week, and there's a lot of them in this particular area of the woodland, which is why I brought you here, and this is their food plant, and it's called the orange tip butterfly. We talked a bit about them last week, and it's almost a woodland species because the plant, their food plant, grows in sort of semi-shade. It will grow on grassy banks as well, and so quite a number of them in here, but it's great fun because this is their food plant, and the females lay their eggs on the underside of the leaves. Now, the great thing about orange tip butterflies is the egg is the same colour as the orange tip on the wing of the male, so you can send children in here amongst the food plant, which this one is called garlic mustard. And some people call it hedge mustard, all sorts of different names. Jack by the hedge. It has the petals in the shape of a cross.
It's in flower at the moment.
It is.
Isn't it?
And so if the sun was out, it's just gone in now, and there's this cool breeze blowing through, it will waft the perfume out, and any orange-tipped butterflies, either the male or the females, will be attracted in here. Once the female's mated, she'll come in, choose one of these plants, and she'll lay her eggs on the underside of the leaves. But you need some children to kind of go on an egg hunt. And you wouldn't think they're difficult to find, but they're incredibly easy to find. She usually sticks one or two of the eggs on the underside of the leaves. And it's called garlic mustard. It's still used in salads today. And years ago, it used to be, the leaves used to be gathered. And if you had mutton, which is kind of an older sheep, if you like, the joint of meat can be quite fatty. And you'd take some of the leaves off this plant, the garlic mustard, and put in with the brew that you were cooking away. And it is quite pungent. So what I'll do is pick one of the leaves off. They're triangular leaves. There we are. And I'll give you the smaller one. And they're quite edible, so don't worry, I'm not giving you anything toxic. And if you just pop it in and give it a chew, or alternatively, you can crush it quite vigorously, and then all of a sudden...
Oh, lovely. Garlic.
You get garlic and a little bit of heat in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the mustard bit.
Oh, gorgeous. So,
which gives it its name.
I do like garlic, I have
good,
to say.
That's fine, yes. Yes, so not to be mistaken with what we sometimes call wild garlic, which is Ransom's, and that will be in flower in about a month's time. It's a little bit early for that, but this is perfect. And you can see it's a huge area in front of us, and it's also growing down the hedgerows all over the farm, and it's really quite a valuable plant. So that's one of the butterfly species, if you like, taken care of. And I was going to drive us down to perhaps the other side of the woodland here, but if we just walk in a little bit, this is...
Lots of ladybirds here as well, early season
yes, they're
ones.
Attracted by the flower. I don't think strictly. Well, it must be a crucifer because the petals are in the cross shape. And when the seed pods ripen, they're in little pods with the seeds in. And, you know, it's very much like other members of the cabbage family. So, you know, I will call it a crucifer. Whether it's right to do that or not, I don't know. Anyway, if we just stroll through a bit, because...
Rat is pioneering the way for us here.
He certainly is, yes.
So, into the woods.
There. Now, the habitat changes once we get more into the shaded area of the woodland. The soil here is very, very, very fertile indeed. And so you can see, stretches away, way into the distance... one of the most important plants on the farm, and it's the bane of every gardener, every child with short trousers on, stinging nettles. Masses of them. And why is it important? Well, to have butterflies, you've got to do several things. You need a food source for them, for the caterpillars. Remember, they have four stages of their life: the egg stage, the larval stage, then the pupa, which then turns miraculously from that into an adult butterfly. So this is a crucial part of what we're looking at, of those life cycles. And it's this change out in the countryside that has triggered the worry for some of the butterfly species, because their special habitats that they need, even if one of them's missing, it affects hugely the population for the rest of them. Yeah, so it's like a piece of jigsaw puzzle, and if one of the bits are missing, then there's trouble.
Well, what's happening to our beds of nettles then?
Yeah, they're just disappearing. People are building on the wasteland. You know, as I said, it's the bane of gardeners, so if you have it in your garden. The other thing is, it's a sign of really good fertile soil. You can see the nettles over there. They're nearly 2 feet tall already. And
these will grow right up through the summer.
They will, and the sort of nettles have an incredible root system. They all kind of join together under the soil. You can't really see that. But they're called stinging nettles because on the underside of the leaf, if I pull one of the leaves off, again, another triangular leaf, just underneath them, they're covered in little tiny minuscule hairs, and those break off. Just rub my fingers over, but I've got skin like leather, so don't try this. I put it on my wrist.
He's been stung.
And I did get one on my wrist. So the little hairs break off, and they have quite a powerful acid in them, and that's what causes a sting. But the butterflies, and there are at least, four species that lay their eggs on the underside of nettle leaves, which is why it's such an important plant. One of them would be one of our garden favourites, the peacock butterfly. This is its sole food plant, more or less. The other one is Red Admiral, which if you see them at this time of the year, they've almost certainly brought themselves in from the near continent. They're really powerful flyers. Those two species are doing, doing quite well. And then there's the small tortoiseshell, which has declined quite rapidly, particularly in the eastern counties where we've had some dry weather. They also lay their eggs on the underside of the nettle leaves. The first two we mentioned, the peacock butterfly and the red admiral, the caterpillars all hatch out and they feed together in a group. So when you see a whole patch of nettles defoliated, yep, they have nettles for breakfast, dinner and supper, but it's their food plant and that's the crucial part of their life cycle before they fly off and as adults and have pollen and nectar from the other plants and maybe do some breeding later in the year. And then the third one, which we don't see quite so much, is the comma butterfly. And you do see it more in sort of wooded areas. And again, that uses nettles as its food plant. So you can see that if you start losing your nettle beds or this plant in white flowers in front of us, the garlic mustard, because it's classed as a weed, I don't know, yet it's crucially important for the biodiversity of all the butterfly species, these individual plants. And when we go out later in the year, do another countryside podcast on one of the big wildflower fields here at the farm, we see birdsfoot trefoil and some of the other plants in similarly related, and that attracts butterflies like the clouded yellow butterfly and some of the blue species as well, the common blue. Occasionally at this time of the year you'll see holly blue, which is quite an early flyer, but that lays its eggs on holly. And a bit confusing, it's one of the food butterfly species has a second brood, but it's on ivy the second time round, so it kind of has unusually two distinct food plants for the caterpillars. And I've seen two or three already. The sun unfortunately has gone in, otherwise we'd have certainly been serenaded by one or two orange-tipped butterflies flying around us at the moment.
I've seen some in the garden already, yes, when when the sun was out, as you say. And a little dance they do. I presume that's a mating ritual.
Yes, they do. If the female's often flying about, she has some black on her wings, so although she might look like a small white, she's probably at this time of the year, which is mid-April or just after mid-April, she's probably an orange tip, a female orange tip, and it's only the male that has those sort of little circles of orange near the tip of his forewings, and he sort of flies about, and one flies near the other. They'll both fly up and see who's who, and then you'll have this lovely little sort of pirouetting up into the sky, and then mating occurs, and this is the plant they then head for. So it's like an invisible magnet, not much to us at all, but to them it's a crucial part. And when those individual jigsaw pieces go missing, that's when the problems start, and that's what's being noticed, because land reclamation, change in farming over the years, you don't get the nettle patches, people moving out into the countryside and don't want nettles in the bottom of the garden. You can understand all the individual problems that just by being a tidy gardener it can cause, but if you've got a nettle patch, it doesn't need to be like High Ash Farm where they're down in the bottom area of the woodland. The soil is incredibly fertile, it's almost like black peat, and the nettles are up well over the top of your knees already, and there's been butterflies flying about in there, particularly the peacock butterflies and the first red admirals, and they're all searching about to lay their eggs in that food plant.
So your exhortation is to people, just think about the butterflies. If you love them,
yes,
then give them some of their food just tucked away at the end of the garden.
Yes,
they'll love it.
Yeah, that's it. That's all you need to do. It's often very simple to do. Doesn't really cost anything. And yet it's crucial, because I don't know many people that don't love butterflies. And there's all the different species. Many of them are very exacting in their food plants, and that's where the problem is. We've not got the biodiversity out in the countryside to sustain all the different requirements of the creatures that live there, and that's what we need to do. Some lovely celandines just tucked away under that patch of nettles over there.
Yellow flowers.
Yes. I think William Wordsworth got it bang on. Bright as the sun himself, he described those as. There we are.
And he did something about daffodils, I seem to remember. Yeah,
I think he did, yes. He's well-versed, yes.
Oh, we love butterflies, yes, though. We love butterflies. And love is like a butterfly, a rare and gentle thing.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah.